Luke Hodge has had the best read on Alistair Clarkson as this year has unfolded, which is not surprising given the long-term connection there. And he has become the reference point when you contemplate the idea of Clarkson coming into a fresh club. Hodgie, great to have you back.
Morning, Jared. I think I was starting to believe last week that, look, it was a nice, smooth process and he was going to make a decision this week. But as we sort of said the whole way along, is why would he rush? If he's got options, why would he rush in? Because one thing you know about Clarko is at the heat of the moment, he makes a quick decision and it might not be the right one. But when he's got time and space to sort of sit back and think and sum up all the options, he did that with GWS, even though we had the four interviews and found out that wasn't the right pathway for him. The North Melbourne one looked like it was a making for both of them. And then because of his patience, he's now got a possible suitor. And I'm sitting here saying, North Melbourne supporters, don't be stressed. Just because he's saying he'd like an interview, this is Clarko doing the due diligence, making sure that every stone has been turned to make sure that he makes a clear decision and a right decision for him and his family. So just because he's agreed to meet with Essendon and have a chat, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's more in favour to go there than North Melbourne. It's just making sure that he's a person who wants to make sure everything is done correctly. He knows all the information before he makes a pretty quick decision moving forward.
So don't worry about the imposition of deadlines?
One thing, I wouldn't be telling a person like Clarko, you need to make a decision now, because if he's getting forced and told to do something, I don't think it'll end your way. So if North have been patient with him this far, just because another suitor or another team has become available, don't force the issue and tell him to go and make a decision now, because I don't know 100% that would be the right way to go with a person like Clarko. I still think he's a good suitor. Like if you match up the two, if you look at North Melbourne, he's got 5 years of grace. He's got 5 years of bringing the people who he wants. In threes, if they're still developing, like North Melbourne have had a poor record for the last 4 or 5 years. They need a change. They need someone to come in. And Clarko's the person to come in, to bring sponsors, to bring members, to bring hope and positivity going to the future. If you go to Essendon, all of a sudden, that five-year grace isn't there. Essendon are a team that wants success. They're desperate for success. And if you look, they got rid of Knights because he wasn't doing the job after 2 years. Obviously, whatever with Hurdy. But then Worsfold, they weren't happy with Worsfold because he wasn't getting there quick enough. Ben Rutten made the finals in his first year. And now in the second year, they're trying to get rid of him. So this grace of Essendon, and don't forget the old Hawthorn-Essendon rivalry from the members, as soon as it gets into maybe second year or into his third year, where if they haven't made the finals, how about these Essendon supporters thinking, I'll go back to Hawthorn, we should have kept Rutten. There's still a bit to play out, even though as far as a media and entertainment point of view, looking from afar, it's made it a little bit spicy.
It has made it spicy indeed. So that's the downside to Essendon. What do you think the upside would be for Clarkson as he looks into that role?
You mean apart from sticking it to Hawthorn after getting rid of him?
Now, I was wondering whether you would say that or not. But that is such an interesting part. So he talks about he's been on the Jeff Kennett World Tour this year. He speaks about that publicly. There is obviously residual hurt there. And I can imagine the idea of going to the bitter enemy, which is depicted across a double page spread in today's Herald Sun, and going, well, you didn't want me, so here I am on the other side of it.
And can you imagine if Hawthorn are on the brink of finals next year and Essendon are in the same position and Clarko knocks Hawthorn out to take a final spot? He's not going to come down to make a decision solely on that, but if it works out that he does coach Essendon, he'll be sitting there with a little smirk on his face going, it's my time to get you back after what you put me through. So it'll be interesting anyway. But as you sort of said, there's so many, you asked before about what are the highlights of Essendon. Essendon do have some quality players on their list. And we saw that for when they made the finals in 2021. Yes, they had a harder draw this year. They didn't play the football we expected. There was a lot of comments on, were they defensively minded enough? I can tell you what, if Clarko gets into that side, they're going to be defensively minded, I can tell you that, because there's going to be vision upon vision upon vision all through pre-season of doing the right things defensively and what not to do. And anytime you do that, whether it's a short-sighted game, whether you're, it's a practice match, whether it's a preseason game, he takes that so seriously that if anyone takes steps one foot the wrong way in a defensive system, you'll be shown about it. And if you keep doing it, you won't play. So that's the thing with it. There is so many upsides to the Essendon list if he does decide to go there. And this is all hypothetical. Ben Rutten at the moment still has the job at Essendon until we go further. But yeah, there's an upside if he does make that decision.
Yes, there is. So, do you think there's so Robbo and I were debating this last night. Do you think there's a difference between the legacy piece of winning the flag with North Melbourne? So this is not assuming anything; it's just the ultimate aim. So you go in to build a program to win a premiership. Is there a difference between the legacy premiership, the romance of rebuilding North Melbourne and taking them to a flag, the first one since the Pagan era, or mending a riven Essendon and winning the first flag since the Sheedy era, which if Carlton don't get there first would have historic echoes as well?
Oh, they're both. I think knowing Clarko for as long as what I have, the sentimental side of what John Kennedy did go from Hawthorn to North Melbourne. He was very much a big mentor for Clarko, and we did a lot of things in pre-season because of that's what John Kennedy taught Clarko in pre-season when he was in there. The grueling team first, the Kennedy Commandos, we were the Clarkson Commandos. There's a lot of sentimental value with that decision to go there. But on the flip of it, for a big coach like Clarko to go to a rival team and be the first person to coach a premiership team after Kevin Sheedy, That's pretty big. So whatever decision he makes, if he can push on to make success, you know it's going to be a huge story either way because there's so much attached to both teams.
Yeah. What about the Essendon scenario right now? Just the phantom zone of living in these couple of days. Zach Merritt gave us a little insight. So we get you to run the leadership portfolio, Luke. How would you deal with days like this?
You know, it's like whenever things aren't going great, whenever you've got no confidence or things are against you, you can have performances like what they've done over the last 2 weeks, especially on the weekend. That was as bad as what I've seen from Essendon. And I think a lot of their supporters and a lot of their players have admitted to that as well. But a lot of things do get magnified as well. The Hines thing on the bench with Rutten, when I saw that, I think it was about a 10 or 12 second. And we heard Hines talk yesterday and said it wasn't much. I'll get along with Ben really well. We joke around. There was no issue. I was just got tackled. But you sort of look into it. If you're on the bench for 12 seconds and someone's trying to give you help and trying to give you feedback and telling you what you did right, what you did wrong, you just go away at 50, have a chat, you make eye contact at least once. I think that was the damning thing. And I think a lot of people looked into that and going, has he lost the players? From one act, you don't know that. But there's a few things as a leadership group, you'd be sitting down with a player who did that and saying, look, that's not on. You need to show their coach full respect. If any coach, whether it's the fitness coach, the trainer, the doctor, especially the head coach, if they're talking to you, look them in the eye. No matter how angry you are, at least for a second, then you can look away and do stuff. But at least give them the respect that you are listening to what they're saying.
Yeah, so if you'd been aware of that separately to all of this, because it is a couple of weeks ago, that is the sort of thing that you would address.
Yeah, without a doubt. And especially the hardest thing is when things aren't going well as a group, that's when everything's magnified. So you need to nip a lot of things in the butt early on and have these chats, have these discussions with your players, just so when people are looking for things, they don't find them. And there's no doubt next week, Fines on the bench, he's going to be chatting with Ben as often as he can and making sure it all looks positive, because for a second there, he was just in the game and his mind was somewhere else because he obviously had what's going on. But these are these little things that you try and touch on to make sure that everyone's looking after one another, because everyone from external is looking in at the club going, well, what can we look at? What can we pick at?
How do you find a sense of purpose, Luke, when the coach looks like he's out the door and the board has lost faith in him, and he's there, he addresses it in a self-deprecating manner, he wins the admiration of the players for doing that, but how do you stay together for a week in such curious circumstances?
It's, tell you what, Jerry, it would be tough for what's gone on. And I think we spoke a lot last year about clubs on how to handle saying goodbye to coaches and doing it the right way, wrong way. We sort of went Hawthorn were looked good at the start, and then that fell down. And then we thought, oh, hang on, Carlton went and bypassed Hawthorn on how not to get rid of a coach or how to part ways with a coach. But then this one, the inconsistencies of what we've heard from Essendon this year has been unreal. From where it was stable, we're going through a review. You don't hear anything about the review, and then the review comes back saying that, yep, we're going to keep the coach. Next thing, the president stands down, and we're now searching for a new, or possibly searching for a new coach, at least asking questions. As a player, it's so hard. And I've always said, stability on field comes from stability off field. So I know we sit back and look at the performances that the players have been putting up, but that's no worse than the stability has been off field at that football club, which is hard. And I know that everyone in that position is trying to do the best thing for the football club, but there's been so many chops and changes and bumps in the road along the way. It's no wonder probably everyone there is probably looking over their shoulder.
Yes. Do you have a similar experience? I'm just trying to think back to your early years. Did you have that week where Peter Schwab was and wasn't, and the weirdness that goes with an exiting coach?
We had a week where I think Schwab was going to coach out the rest of the year, and then I think he did one game. And so, mate, I was a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I think a 19 or 20-year-old kid then. So at the time, so this is where you sort of look at the younger guys and they don't know what's going on. They're guys out there just trying to play football. A lot of them are just excited. They're playing senior football. Whether you win or lose is not a priority. I know when I was a kid, it wasn't. It was about playing senior football because that's what you wanted to do. It's not until you get older where you understand the pressures of a coach, what goes on, how important off-field stability around the football club impacts the coaches, impacts the players and the whole football department. But as far as what I'd gone through, with Swabby and Hawthorn, I was a young kid, so I didn't sort of take any of it in as much as what I would have if I was an older player.
Yeah. So that very much falls to the leaders then to provide a bit of direction when Saturday night's game comes along. There's one game left in the season. You're coming off just a dreadful performance. You're in this phantom zone as to what on earth the club is doing. Whose responsibility is Saturday night to provide a reason to play and a credible performance worthy of a professional team?
This is where you'd hope the coaches get with the senior group and just sort of say, like, this is back against the wall stuff. And I know, funny, we're talking about Clarko, but whenever something was going on in the media and they were having a go at us as a group, us as a club, he'd use that as motivation that this is 22 blokes out in the field plus coaches. Let's show them what we're made of. And it's a really us versus you mentality. I think that's what they'll need to get out this last game. There's one more game at the end of the year. Richmond are playing some pretty good footy at the moment. And that would be the motivation. How can we upset this team who we've had a pretty big history against as well? But just to show everyone out there that we are united and we've got a bit of fight left in us.
Luke Hodge runs our leadership portfolio, gets us underway on a Wednesday. We'll shortly take your calls. There's a few more things to run past Hodgie next, including last night's tribunal hearing, the clearing of Zane Cordy. So I think we're all quite relieved on that front. And then an eye toward what's coming, and particularly Carlton and Collingwood. Jacob Wiedering is going to join me as the morning unfolds on our McCafe menu. Sam Edmund with the latest around Essendon and more broadly in the footy world. Adam Gilchrist and Wayne Hawks in the studio. McCafe, our official coffee partner.
It's a really confusing one at the moment. You can see that he pours in it, and as a player, you're sort of almost at the point now, and I think I mentioned it earlier at the start of the year, you've almost just got to move away from that reaction of putting your arm up to it, because if it's going to get reported straight to the tribunal, it's just a really tricky one. So I'm not sure. And there's been some controversial ones in the last couple of weeks. And even I felt a little bit for Brad Crouch with his incident. My interpretation of it was that Gardner had slipped a little bit as he went to kick. So, I mean, my takeaway of it again is that we just maybe got to move away from the bumpers players.
That was Tom Hawkins last night. He had said that earlier in the year with the suspension. I think we're all thankful that the Zane Cordy case came back as not guilty. It was a bit of a head-scratcher what it was doing at the tribunal in the first place. And sort of what the AFL's end game with that is. Perhaps it was meeting their legal obligations, as at least having that tested. Luke, I know you followed this. Luke Hodge, what did you think last night?
I can understand why the match review panel sent it to the tribunal, because they probably would have got overruled no matter what decision they made anyway. But I'm glad that it was talked about and put out there to show that you can still have a physical game and do it cleanly, because I think I'm the same as everyone else, because I thought the bump was dead. I thought it was, if you elect a bump and you get someone in the head, whether you mean to or not, it's your fault and you will be held to account for it. But in certain situations, you still can correctly lay a bump, as we saw on the weekend. And I think how they worked it, it's if someone sees you coming and they've got clear vision that you're there and it's a fairly shaped bump, we can still accept that in the game. I think where we're going from now and what it's making more and more clear, it's when someone's not ready for it, as far as the crouch on Darcy Gardner, where he's kicking the ball, wasn't needed to be bumped then. You could have pushed him and had the same impact. You weren't going to smother the ball. I think that's where it starting to clear up. The bump still can be done in the game in a correct manner if the person who you're doing it to can see you coming, which clears up a lot for a lot of people, I think.
Jacob Wienering, right. We have the pleasure of this conversation every couple of weeks for Hyundai Tucson Turbo Diesel in stock now. What was on Saturday night and what comes on Sunday afternoon. Jacob Wiedering, always great to have you on the program.
It's good to be back, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Now, just as a viewer, Saturday night was exhausting. It was impossibly cruel at the end. I have a slight emotional leaning toward you. At the moment, I felt like I needed trauma counselling at the end of it. That's to say nothing of the Blues fans who are in attendance or those who are out on the field. How did you digest what took place late on Saturday night?
Yeah, it was a tough one, Jared. Obviously, the game certainly came down to the wire. We've had a few of those and been able to get over the line sort of at the start of the year. But to be honest, I actually didn't see that last goal. I remember seeing the two-minute sign going up, and I said to myself, I'm going to make sure that my man doesn't get anywhere near the ball. And I think I was on Fritch at the time. We ran past the contest, and then I hear the roar, and obviously, Cozzy kicked that goal. So it was incredibly disappointing. You probably saw the reactions of some of the boys, but you have to pick yourself up and you've got to go again. And there's a pretty big motivation to get the job done this week.
Yeah, absolutely, there is. Just take us to the final siren. What did you feel?
I mean, and it's 120 minutes of work, and we've sort of reviewed the game. We can go into it a little bit later if you like. We looked at it, and it was probably 118 minutes of very good football, a brand that we really want to play. And I think Melbourne would probably say the same about themselves. It was a contested brand. There was lots of pressure, tackles. Our defence held up really well. I think they had 58 or 59 entries, which was 10 or 11 more than us, and they went at a lower efficiency. And I mean, we were really happy with the way we played up until those last 2 minutes. And there were just moments in those last 2 minutes that we probably could have grabbed a hold of and won the game from there. And I guess you look back as well, Melbourne's game the previous week, I reckon they went through a pretty similar review in how they could have won the game. So lots of learning, obviously incredibly frustrating and disappointed. I guess most people would have seen the reaction. It was a heart stopper, and the boys were pretty flat afterwards. But Vossi was able to get us up, and as I said, we've got very high motivation to go out against Collingwood this week and get a win. So I'm sure we'll do what we can there.
It was heroic, I thought, the way you played. It was that big stand for the prize that's on offer. Did you feel like you just laid it all out there?
I mean, in those sort of games, understanding who we're coming up against, we've played Brisbane, Melbourne, and now we've got Collingwood, all teams that are going to be playing in September. So it was always going to be a test this last 3 weeks, but I guess against the reigning premiers, you try and give it your absolute all. And I thought guys all over the field really stood up. I thought Sam Doherty was unbelievable in the midfield for the most part. Harry up forward was, obviously Charlie was somewhat taken out of the game by Petty and played a great game, and Harry got on the scoreboard. And You look at Liam Stocker and Marchbank and McGovern, those sort of guys coming back in and getting some continuity. It gives us some really good confidence going into the back half of this season. So, yeah, hopefully we can, as I said, I'm not sure if I was on the radio before the last Collingwood game, but I might choose to tackle instead of bump this week against Collingwood. No, it should be a good game, though, for sure.
How forensic was the analysis of that last 2 minutes that you mentioned?
We watched it twice over. And again, you sort of just try and look at moments. I mean, no one ever goes out there to make mistakes.
No.
I just remember the 2 minute sign going up, and I think there was about a minute to go, and we sort of won the ball back, and Harry takes an uncontested mark, and I think Charlie takes the uncontested mark out of the D50, kicks it to Harry, and then we can just maintain the ball from there. We miss a kick. We probably kick the ball a little corridor and we go to a long down the line. There was a contest where I was able to seal and, you know, two blokes spoil each other. There was just a number of moments that we really could have just taken a hold of, and it's frustrating to look at, and understandably, I guess everyone involved, it's not just the individual players, everyone involved is frustrated and wants to do better. And as I said, they're going to be learning experiences. If the situation arises next week against a team that's done it 8 or 9 times this year, being able to get over the line in the last 2 minutes, we'll train that and hopefully get a job done. So, we looked at it in depth, but at the same time, that was the first thing we looked at. And then we looked at the previous 118 minutes, as I spoke about, which was a really, really positive outcome for us.
Yeah, so the coaching technique in that. So I'm a long-term believer that winning close games is a learned skill, and sometimes you have to have the other side of it to learn it and to ingrain it and then to roll it out next time. Is that the sort of approach that your coaches took?
No, I'd completely agree with that. You have to understand the game throws so many different scenarios at you. Obviously, defenders have got their things to worry about. Midfielders, forwards, the same. And there's just different situations. It's like in the last 2 minutes, if you are up, you want to keep the ball in tight and try and get some repeat stoppages. You want to keep it in your forward half. Ideally, keep it close to the boundary. It's just all these little things that I guess you have to know as a player. And then at the same time, if you're a leader out on the ground, you've got to try and communicate it as best as possible. And yeah, obviously there was, as I said, some moments that we really could have got done right, but I think if those moments arise again, the players that were involved and the team will certainly get those things done. So I guess in a nutshell, that is how they went about it yesterday.
Jacob, the intangible question, the unanswerable, it'll only be there in hindsight, is how does a team who lays it all out there in such a manner and gets such overwhelming disappointment at the end, how do you dust yourself off to be ready to do it again in 8 days' time? Have you got an answer for that in prospect?
It is a hard question to answer. All I'll say is last year I had holidays booked for September, and this year there is a very, very hungry club in Carlton that wants to play at the back end of the year, and it's an awesome opportunity to be involved in. And what better team to come up against than Collingwood, the old rival? I believe tickets are sold out. I'm not too sure.
Yep.
And it's just going to be an incredible environment, and you can take it in one or two ways. You can see it as pressure and obviously you'll get nervous and those sorts of things, or it's a privilege to go out there and play. And I played out in front of a few, 70, 80,000 crowds in round one, but I don't think I've run out in a crowd, in front of a crowd this big. So, and certainly obviously the stage is set. So we'll take it on board for sure. And I guess it just motivates me to go out and do a job for this team. So certainly there's the carrot at the end, but we've got to do a job and there's a process behind it.
So this is an elimination final before an elimination final for you in a very real way. So the shapes, it'll be the biggest game that you've played in?
I would probably say so. That's something we probably looked at yesterday as well. The moments that we've had across the season shouldn't go unrecognised. We've had games where we've been down and we've been able to come back. There's been games where we're up by a lot and teams have come back and challenged us, and we've still been able to get the win. I mean, Richmond stands out to me. GWS up there, the Sydney game, the Fremantle game over here. So there's been moments, and there's been games where we've been able to stand up and do a job. And obviously over the last 2 weeks, we haven't been able to do that. And there is that inner motivation to do the job with, obviously, the external noise that's probably going to come with this week. And it's just exciting. It's exciting to be, it really is all out. Obviously, there may be the, I guess you've got the Doggies game to look at as well, but that's completely out of our control. And that's what Vossi's been preaching, the controllables and the process. And that's what we'll focus on.
I love that insight. There's a few wise people in our game who say you get what you deserve, and you deserve this opportunity for all the work that you've done throughout the season. So is Michael Voss sort of drawing all that together to crystallise it for you?
I think he's just trying to instill in us that we have, you know, it's been a process since, I think it was about November 22 when we came back, and all the older boys came back with the younger boys a little bit earlier. The pre-season, we had a great one. Obviously, the inclusions we've had, and that's probably another thing, and it's never an excuse. Players are going down sick and injured, but we've had some pretty important guys come in and out of the side, and as I mentioned before, we've got some names that come in and do a really good job for us. So there's, yeah, I guess your season's full of adversity, and it's how you sort of handle it and cope with it, and it'll really tell our story come Sunday.
So it's Collingwood and it's perfect. Is they're playing for a place in the top four, you're playing for a place in the top eight. It's the biggest Carlton Collingwood game since the 80s. I think that's unarguable. So that's a long time before your time, Jacob. What does Collingwood mean to you as a rival?
It's a really good question, Jared. I think we may have tried to answer this question maybe last year. It was,
yeah.
It's a funny thing about rivalries. Obviously, with us, we probably haven't been anywhere near the top eight in recent years. And now both teams, there's stories behind each team. Collingwood's unbelievable back end of the year. Obviously, our sort of coaching journey up until now and the maturity of the group over the past 7-8 years. And I can't go back to the 80s because I was born in 97. It's clearly a massive rivalry within our game, and rivalries are certainly unbelievable to watch. And from, I guess, what you hear is it's a privilege to play in them. And as I said, 100,000 people, family and friends watching, it's win or go home for us. It's cementing a very good season for Collingwood if they get the job done. So there's plenty to play for. The whole AFL world will be watching, and hopefully the Blues come out on top.
You've got me counting the days already. I can't wait to be there to watch it. So in all of it, just let me see if you've been following anything else, Jacob, while you're zeroed right in. I'm super curious. Your captain he wins the appeal on Thursday night and he plays. Great result for Carlton. Then Zane Cordy gets taken to the tribunal last night, which is a total head scratcher for all of us as to why that case is there, but he beats it. Where do you think we are with the bump, with collisions and concussion at the moment?
We've spoken about this previously. I'm very much about consistency, and at the moment we clearly don't have it. I think there's a lot of people talking about the game. This isn't necessarily coming from me or not my opinion, but the game is somewhat lost with what is going on with concussion, with the bump. I guess with the resulting injury that occurs from certain football actions as well. And I think that was sort of the argument with Cripper's one was you sort of saw his eyes were for the ball. He was going for the ball in the contest, and as a result, Callum Archie gets concussed. And it's unfortunate that that's the way it panned out. And obviously there's going to be a lot of media covering it because of, you know, Cripper as our captain and the way it sort of all panned out up until I think it was Thursday. No, I was in bed.
Yes.
I woke up the next morning and found out that my captain was playing. So it was either Walshy and I are going to be doing the speech pre-game, and I think we were more thinking about that than Cripper getting off. So Obviously a massive boost from morale, and he came out and did a job for us on the weekend. But yeah, I guess back to your point, Jared, consistency is key. I'm not a massive fan of the injury, depending on the action, of course, the injury sort of determining the amount of weeks of suspension as well. I think that's been a case that's sort of been argued the last, you know, well, probably for this season. So it's certainly a tough one. It's probably got to be reviewed and looked at pretty carefully, because at the end of the day, the safety of the player is paramount. And that should be the first thing in people's minds. And then from there, we can work out a strategy to, I guess, make sure that we get the right result for the players that are either fined or suspended.
Yeah, it's not simple. And I think you've articulated that well. And the last one I was just going to ask you about is, you would have a level of understanding, I suspect, for a few Essendon players at the moment when you're in a phase where there's just uncertainty, these vacuum days where there's a lot going on that you're not privy to whilst trying to prepare for footy. Can you put yourself in Essendon's shoes this morning with the recent experiences that you've had?
Oh, I think 12 months ago today, Jared, I was in their shoes.
Yeah.
And the current football club was too. So I can certainly sympathise with what's happening at Essendon. And it's probably just the unknown for a lot of people, players, coaches, staff. And it's certainly tough to go out, train, do your job, go out and try and play and get a result for the club when there is a lot of noise that you really can't control as someone on the inside. So, again, when I saw, I think it was either the paper yesterday or the day before, I think I said to Harry at the cafe, that was us sort of 12 months ago, and sort of our journey, we thought about our journey and reminisced a little bit about how far we've come, and that's sort of a positive from our point of view, how far we've been able to grow as a team and as a club and unite. So there's every opportunity for Essendon to do the same. You can sort of see how fast it turns around. So hopefully they get things right in their departments.